Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, listener. I'm Kyle Anker, and welcome to Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. This week, it is time for some calm before another potential storm as Manchester United come out of another international break and into some more Premier League action. Joining me as ever to make sense of all things Manchester United is Laurie Whitwell. He's my fellow Manchester United beat reporter for The Athletic and a good mate. How are you doing, Laurie?
I'm good, Kyle. Great to hear from you.
What have you been getting up to during your international break?
Having a little bit of downtime, to be honest. Been following Wales, speaking to Ryan Giggs, who's had a difficult evening against England at Wembley, but then slightly more positive one against Republic of Ireland. They're doing all right. We're trying to bring together another piece on that 6-1 at Old Trafford. So we did a piece that went live on Friday, sort of trying to give people the inside read, so to speak, on how it happened, what the kind of reactions were, and the sort of opinions around it from people close to it. And then this week, working on a piece to do with the last time that United lost 6-1, obviously, to Manchester City, 2011. Slightly different circumstances, different kind of match, really. But nevertheless, maybe there are some tips, some lessons as to how to respond to that, because United actually came out of that and won quite a few in a row. So yeah, hopefully that should give some kind of comfort to people ahead of the Newcastle game.
Also with us on this podcast as ever, he's United We Stand editor and contributing writer to The Athletic. It's Mr. Andy Mitten. Andy, where were you when United won Manchester City 6 happened?
You brought back a bad memory there. I was in the Stretford end, and there were a group of football tourists in front of me with half and half Manchester City, Manchester United scarves and jesters hats. And at the end of the game, they were posing for pictures smiling, and that was more offensive to me than watching Manchester City score 6 goals. And my brother and my mate, the three of us sat together, and I just didn't feel like smiling after watching that. It was horrendous. Interestingly, I think it was only 1-0 at half time, so it was completely different to the 6-1 we saw recently.
Where do you keep your half and half scarf from that match, Andy?
I wrote about, I'm not a big fan of the half and halves, and I've written that a few times. And then what I then get when I next go to Old Trafford is all the lads who sell them, who I've known for like 30 years, collaring me. And, you know, the pretty hard lads, a lot of them as well. Hey, I've seen what you've written. So I feel I'm in a rock, between a rock and a hard place on that one. And some of them are lifelong United fans, and that's how they earn their living, and they're good people. But I used to buy the half and half scarves for European games. I can remember the first one I bought was Atletico Madrid against Manchester United in 1991 in Madrid, and it seemed exciting. I don't have the same level of enthusiasm for Manchester United, Liverpool half and half scarves. That's to put it diplomatically. And you, Laurie, what about you? I think you've got a wall full of them.
I've never. I used to have a woolly hat, you know, and I used to buy little badges every time I went to Old Trafford from the Swagmen, and I filled it all up. So I had this like hat that started off as quite a nice woolly hat that, you know, to keep the wind and rain out, and then ended up being some quite heavy thing that I don't think I could quite keep up, but I've got it somewhere under my bed. But yeah, there we are. I was in New York when United lost 6-1 to City, because I was working over there, and I was in the office, and the match was on the TV screen. I was sort of, you know, trying to watch it, trying to do my work, and there's a guy I think he was a Southend United fan, but anyway, he was very excitable, and he kept nudging me going, oh, it's 5-1, oh, it's 6-1. I was like, yeah, thanks, I can see, cheers.
I remember half and half ski hats. They were popular on the Stretford end in the 80s, so you'd have like a United and Celtic or Rangers, and Celtic were probably more popular, but you'd see plenty of Rangers ones as well. And That was in the 80s. You didn't really see them so much in the 90s.
While I've got your attention, I want to let you know there's plenty of Manchester United writing over on The Athletic right now, as ever. Andy's spoken to Rudy Garcia, and there's been a fantastic little conversation with Edison Cavani. I've done an X's and O's tactical piece on Cavani to see whether or not he's going to be the next Zlatan or the next Falcao. Laurie, has written about the last time United lost 6-1, as you've just heard there. And I'm also going to have a go at how Manchester United are supposed to defend as well. So you can enjoy all of that, looking at Manchester United's past, present and future. Access is currently only £1 per month, so go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod to sign up. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod to get some of the best Manchester United writing you'll find in English language. Right then, gentlemen, let's look at the international break. And the top of my notes here is Paul Pogba, because apparently he's been talking up how Real Madrid would be a dream move. Again, Andy, we've been here before. There was that lovely spell between December 2018 and around about March 2019 where Paul Pogba was one of the best players in the Premier League. And then Ander Herrera got hurt. And then Pogba went on international duty and talked about Real Madrid. Why is he doing it again?
He's not... Well, he might be helping himself, but he's not helping the mood among Man United fans after, especially after that 6-1. And especially after a poor start to the season in which Paul Pogba has been one of the poorest performing players. Interesting you mentioned December 18. His stock had fallen in the weeks before Ollie took charge. It really had. It was on the floor. And I was even told United are just so unhappy with him that they're going to get rid of him. And that didn't happen because there was a change of manager, and it's often easier to get a manager in than change the whole team. But as you say, he started playing really, really well. He's just been wildly inconsistent. I don't doubt that he's hugely talented, but he's nowhere near consistent enough for Manchester United, not to justify his status. If you make comparisons with what he was like at Juventus, and I went to see him in Turin a few times, and he was head and shoulders above a lot of the players in a very, very good team. But I know there were some slight frustrations there because he could disappear within matches, and it's been frustrating to watch so far this season. And I'd like to see the Pogba which we saw at Brighton after lockdown, when him and Fernandes were fantastic. And I know that it causes frustrations with his coaches. It's obvious to see. They don't know which Paul Pogba they're getting. You need, if you play in that position for Manchester United, to be relied upon. You need to be consistent. You need to be 8 and 9 out of 10 pretty much every single week. And Paul Pogba isn't. And I'd love him to be working out, but he's had a poor start to this season. He's not the only one. And when he talks of a move to Madrid, my first thought is, why would Madrid buy him? Because United would want decent money for him. In mitigation, he hasn't signed a new contract and he is entitled to talk about other clubs, but he's not one of the best players in the world at the moment. He's not even close. So why would Madrid, who've got aspirations to permanently be the best in the world, sign Paul Pogba? Are they seeing something that none of us are seeing? I still hope that he gets back and becomes an important part for Manchester United, but I'm sorry, he's had a really, really poor start to this season.
Pogba has tested positive for COVID-19. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer spoke to me after the Brighton game and said he was around about 3 or 4 weeks off the pace and he basically didn't get a pre-season. Laurie, you're the man of persons, if I'm the man of numbers. Where are we with this sort of Paul Pogba contract extension? Because there was definitely a point in time where I vaguely remember Raiola saying Pogba was going to stay and sign a contract extension.
Yeah, Raiola said a lot of things, hasn't he? So it's difficult to pinpoint exactly what the truth is at any given moment. And listen, obviously the situation has changed. I think things do develop, and I can imagine Pogba at one stage was thinking, at the end of last season when Bruno came, and I think he was looking at United and thinking, actually, this could be a place for me. And still, that could be the case. I can still see United Paul Pogba signed a new contract at Manchester United, just because when you actually shake it down, and as Andy said, the clubs out there who are available, if they don't get a bid of the right money, he's going to have a year left on his deal next summer, but they've got the clause, so an extra year will be triggered, no doubt. And at that stage, they'll have to make a decision whether they want to extend his contract or sell him. I think that's a real crunch summer for him next summer, really. So, and either way, it could swing. I get the feeling that ideally United would, as good as Pogba has been and as fair as it is to point out the fact he has tested positive for coronavirus and clearly has had some ill effects from that, not being able to train. I don't think he's fully up to speed, is he, from his performances so far. I think in an ideal world, if you could, sell him for a lot of money and, buy, players that were 100% committed to the club in his place, that would be the preferred option, because you can't have somebody... I mean, Chelsea had it with Eden Hazard, I suppose, but he was still doing the business for them, really. I just don't think it creates a great mood around the place if you've got somebody, you know, your star player, really, you know, the guy that has the most eyeballs on him, you know, on Instagram, you know, also all across social media, and then also is the guy that you would hope to be, you know, the one doing the business for you on the pitch. I don't think it's great if he's sort of saying he wants to go. That being said, is deep midfield his best position? I don't know, but we've had this discussion for sort of 4 or 5 years now, and really, if you're a good enough player, I think you can act in whatever role, you know, that the manager asks you to. So, yeah, frustration again, really, because it's a sort of statement, a sentiment that United could do without right now.
I'll be the person in the tower for the game against Newcastle on the weekend, but I'll take a quick question. We'll ask a quick question to both of you, Laurie, Andy. Are you going to start Paul Pogba if you were the United manager this weekend?
I would like to see Donny van de Beek get a start. And I think he's more suited to that role anyway. So personally, I would like to see van de Beek in and Pogba out just to freshen it up. And I think given how poorly Paul Pogba played against Spurs, I think it's a fair change to make at this stage.
Andy?
I think that's fair, but I think you could drop any of the 10 who started against Spurs, and that would also be fair. And maybe it's time for Ole Gunnar to do that. I'm still scarred by the game at Newcastle last year. That was probably one of the lowest points. You had the lad who scored the winner who earned like £2 a week. And you know,
I think he still does. I don't think he's signed any deal, has he?
Yeah, he's done £7 a game now or something like that. And free tracksuit bottoms from Mike Ashley sports stores. But that was horrendous. I'm just not ready for a repeat of it. I'm sorry. It was as bad as it got last October, and I'm an optimist, but I'm feeling pretty pessimistic about the team at the moment and the run of fixtures coming up, starting with Newcastle at the weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It will be a big game this Saturday against Newcastle. But also, a big thing that's come out throughout the international break is the game will be on pay-per-view. The 8 o'clock kickoff between Manchester United and Newcastle will be on Sky Sports box office as part of this new move from the Premier League to put some games behind a paywall. Also, news that broke this international break is something called Project Big Picture, where Manchester United owners have been in bed with Liverpool owners to create a pitch for the future of English football that brings in an 18-game Premier League, removes the Community Shield, and also gets rid of the EFL Cup. A lot of stuff's happened during this international break. There's nothing really to do with Manchester United, but also will affect Manchester United a lot in the weeks to come.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we've only seen what's been reported. You speak to other people around the the game, and there's definitely a lot of division and sort of anger, I suppose, frustration at how it's come out. Just from my own perspective, I think it's a little bit disquieting that, listen, the broad picture is that they want to, you know, give a £250 million bailout to the EFL, which is in desperate need of it. There's clubs that are facing bankruptcy if they don't get an immediate cash injection because matches are still going on behind closed doors and they don't have the match day revenue, which is what sustains them in normal times. That being said, the sort of trade-off for that, which has been proposed by, you know, Fenway, owners of Liverpool, and by the Glazer family, along with Rick Parry, you know, as chairman of the EFL, which is a kind of curious position that he's straddling there, is this idea that then the power is really resides in, you know, the big six, essentially, because it would be giving nine clubs a sort of a long-term shareholder vote, and you know they would need two-thirds of a majority to pass any rule changes. So essentially, if the big six agree, then it's happening, and that just makes me a little bit cautious about going with it. And it, you know, why do they need to, you know, implement those kind of rule changes in exchange for the money that they're giving out, and some of the interesting stuff that they have proposed, you know, such as the increased share of Premier League revenue to the Football League pyramid. So from 92% that the Premier League hold currently, it would be 75%, and 25% would then be distributed out sort of more evenly. That's a great idea. But are they saying we can only do this if you give us more power because we're the clubs that sell the Premier League around the world? You know, clearly more people watch Manchester United, Liverpool, etc. than, you know, the likes of Brighton, I would suppose. But at the same time, it really worries me that would then do away with the kind of equity that there is across the Premier League and the kind of even chance of randomness, really. I think it does shrink the aspirations of clubs if that becomes a factor. And then the pay-per-view thing, I mean, I just think the way it came out, just again, you look at the £14.95 price point and you just wonder, you know, that's what you pay for a big boxing card that comes around, you know, once every few months, not a match every week. And I just think they've got that wrong. I can understand the idea of trying to recoup a bit more money given the fans aren't allowed in the stadium. So, you know, clubs are giving out reimbursements for season tickets, and clearly they've chosen Manchester United as the first game because that, you know, is going to be the one that draws the biggest audience, I would argue, and therefore, you know, might have a trickle down success for the rest of the pay-per-view calendar. But I just think the pricing of it just gives fans the impression that they're sort of last to be thought of, and really they're just being fleeced again. If they set it a little bit lower, people would find it more palatable, you know, £4.95, because it's a different experience watching it on TV than it is, you know, going to a stadium. That's what you pay for. So that people saying, well, it's cheaper than, you know, buying a match ticket, but the whole point is that you go, you'd be, you know, around people that you know care about, and you watch the club that you care about, and you have all the emotions that are involved in watching action live and smelling the grass and hearing the ball, you know. Maybe I'm getting a bit romantic about it, and I think from United's perspective, they are, you know, there is frustration at the fact that the match has then been, you know, made, you know, for 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, which leaves, you know, scant time for a training session on Sunday, really. And then obviously PSG is taking place on Tuesday, so, you know, the fixture schedulers haven't really taken into account clubs, you know, fixture list. They've said, okay, you can, you know, go and be at 8 o'clock. It's prime time Saturday night TV. Thank you very much. But yeah, it doesn't really do United much good in terms of fitness.
Andy, you frequently say football is nothing without fans. How do you feel about pay per view and this big project coming up soon?
This part of the big project, which contains some good ideas, £20 limit for away fans, a guarantee of 3,000 away tickets as a minimum. The idea that grounds should have safe standing sections in, I'm all for all three of them, strongly so, and have been for a long, long time. Do I think that the American owners of Manchester United and Liverpool should somehow be custodians of the future of English football with a huge amount of power? I'm far more circumspect about that. As Laurie mentioned, the collective is one of the most attractive things about the English Premier League. I hate it watching Bournemouth or Watford beat Manchester United like last season, but it does make it more engaging, and it's something that rival leagues, especially La Liga, have tried to move towards, because when you get the same two teams winning all the time, it does become boring. I think that the pay-per-view, the cost is high. I've always been about actually going to the games, and a lot of my readers are the match-going fans, and they've always been my priority. And I've always felt that television has adversely affected the experience of match-going fans. And I realise the match-goers are now in a tiny minority given how popular United are globally. But little examples, Crystal Palace away scheduled for midweek, three seasons on the trot. You can't get back to Manchester after the game. I got the train from Selhurst last season, and it was full of hardcore Manchester United fans who missed the winning goal because they had to get back to catch the last train back to Manchester. And these are your best customers. Call them what you want. Customers, clients. They are the best supporters in terms of the fact that they go into every single match. And they're the ones who are suffering and missing out. I get that TV money has been hugely important, but I still think it's usually the match-going fans who miss out when games are shifted. The team don't want this game to be played at 8 o'clock on Saturday night against Newcastle for the reasons that Laurie said. And if it's going to be anything like last season, I think fans should be paid to watch it. I'm still recovering from that match a year ago. It should be £15 the other way. Who's going to pay that? I mean, I know it'd cover the goal scorer's wages for 4 weeks or whatever, but it was bad. £15 is a lot. They're testing the water, aren't they? And the more this becomes normal, the more I start to worry that, you know, oh, well, that 8 p.m. Saturday night kickoff worked really well. Doesn't work well if you're travelling to Newcastle and you try to get back to Manchester at 10:30 on a Saturday night. And that's my worry, that the match-going fans get ostracised once again.
Well, that's it. Will the genie be put back in the bottle? That's yeah. the question. And is this, you know, crazy situation that we're in being, you know, kind of being used as an exploration for, you know, potential, you know, long-standing, you know, ways of consuming football, watching football, or any kind of issue, you know, the substitutions, the water breaks that we had. I know they got dismissed, you know, fairly quickly, but there's, you can see what the idea is. They are testing the water. I think you're spot on, Andy, because, you know, you can see if it's a success, well, okay, let's bring it back, let's do certain games pay-per-view, and you know, go from there. Yeah, it does. That's what concerns me, I suppose, the long-term effects of all this.
Listeners, please let us know if you will be watching Manchester United Newcastle on pay-per-view and your system for doing it. I will most likely have to find a pub and drink an orange juice, because I will be covering this one. Laurie, what's your method going to be?
Likewise, I think, yeah, find somewhere that shows it, and you know, maybe have a Diet Coke, maybe stretch it to that.
And Andy, will you be watching from Barcelona?
Yeah, I'm on my way to Paris for the game next week, so I'm not quite sure where I'm going to be watching it, but I'm not going to be in Newcastle on Saturday, and I'm just trying to plan through my travel and the European trips. There's various restrictions going to different countries, and I'm just establishing if I can get a press pass for the game in Paris next week, and I think I can, but I'm not going to pretend these are normal times at all, not for fans and not for journalists as well. We've got restrictions, but I like to be at games if possible. But no, I'll be watching Manchester United beat Newcastle 5-0 on a TV screen somewhere. I wish.
Shall we talk about Edison Cavani?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Andy, you spoke to Leon's manager about him, which I thought was a really interesting quirk, because Cavani's put quite a few goals past Leon in recent seasons.
Yeah, he has. I'm pretty downbeat about United at the moment, and I'm a bit worried. I'm worried about the shape of the squad, the start to the season. I know people within the club will say that's because of a complete lack of preparation, but I'm worried. I can't help how I feel. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Cavani in a Manchester United shirt. And I mentioned in the last podcast that I'd spoke to Diego Forlan about him, and he gave me a glowing reference about him. And on Thursday, I went to Lyon for the Athletic and spoke to Rudy Garcia, and I said, what about Cavani? And he could have easily shook his head and gone, no, no, no. But he was glowing about him. He said Paris lost a big part of their strength, and he's fantastic. And not only is he fantastic, but he's a leader and he's a warrior. And when you've got a player who is of the top level, but he also goes into battle every single game, he said, as a manager, that is the dream ticket. And Manchester United have been lacking characters. It's been really obvious in these recent matches. So I'm hopeful that Cavani can be a leader, not so much in talking to the other players because he doesn't really speak English, but in terms of how he trains. I mean, I'm parroting what Forlan told me here. And why not? He knows him far more than I do. And Rudy Garcia knows far more about Cavani than I do, because he's plotted to try and stop him many, many times as a manager. And I'm yet to hear a bad word about him. And you did the piece saying it's hope that he'll be more of an Ibrahimovic than a Falcao. And he hasn't kicked a ball yet for United, but I'm pretty optimistic about him. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. I know he's 33, but I'm told that he really looks after himself. And he wanted to... United wanted him a few times in recent years, and his wage demands were astronomical. That's one side of it. The other side of it, and there's often two versions to the truth in football, was that he wanted to be the number one striker, and those guarantees weren't given to him. At one point, United had Rooney and Van Persie, and he didn't want a repeat of the situation he found himself in at Paris, where Zlatan was the main man, and Cavani's like, I'm actually a really good player too. And I think he proved that. His goal scoring record at Paris was incredible, as it was at every club he's been at. Let's hope he stays fit and carries it on at United, and he has a big impact because it's needed.
He is needed. Unfortunately, he won't be able to play on Saturday against Newcastle. Manchester United confirming on Tuesday that he will definitely miss the Newcastle game due to COVID isolation rules. Andy, you're going to have to isolate when you get back from Paris, aren't you?
Well, no, because I will be going back to Spain. I've not sorted it out yet, but because I'm traveling so frequently, I don't have to quarantine. I just have to prove how often I'm traveling. And that's for the UK. So I'm traveling pretty much weekly. And then going to different countries, it's different. I've just been looking at a flight to Istanbul for the game there on November the 4th. I've not even looked at the rules for Turkey yet. Germany detests you at the airports. Italy detests you at the airports. France, there's nothing. I was in Portugal for the Champions League. There's nothing there. But these change all of the time. So I'm spending half my time reading up on where you have to quarantine and where you don't do.
Well, there you have it. We'll have at least one member of Talk of the Devils at every single game going forward. Laurie, I've written a piece about Cavani. Andy's talked to a manager about Cavani. What are your thoughts on Edinson Cavani right now?
I thought you were going to say, you've done bugger all. No. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's frustrating that he's not going to be there for the Newcastle game because, you know, clearly that was something United could have predicted, you know, and it was sort of go back to the summer, and that's the kind of mitigation, I would say, for some of the mood around the club, you know, going into the start of this season, the fact that, you know, transfers were left until the last moment to complete and Cavani's being one of them, and therefore he's out until, you know, the next game, you know, PSG, which, you know, listen, that's not a bad game for him to make his debut when you feel he's going to be fired up for that one. And I have been looking at his Instagram quite closely for any clues as to how he's doing, and he is keeping everybody up to date with his treadmill activities, and as you mentioned, looking very trim. He does look in good nick, as much as anyone, you know, does look in good nick on Instagram through the filters. So yeah, listen, he's supposed to be, as Andy said, the people that I've spoken to about him, and I'm sure you've got a really good piece, haven't you, on Cavani up on The Athletic at the moment, Carl, in terms of his output, but you kind of sense that he has had injury problems, so that drop off last season does slightly concern me, but overall his attitude and his elite ability, you'd think he would add something to United's team.
He definitely will. It just remains a question as to who's going to get the crosses in. Maybe it could be Alex Telis.
Somebody mentioned that to me, actually. Yeah, Telis as the cross from deep from the left, you know, using the perhaps a dummy run from Marcus Rashford to create a bit of space and crossing it deep into the box, because that's clearly what he needs, right, Cavani?
It could work. One of us on this podcast here will be doing a statistical something on Telis soon. Doesn't question me. But next up, we need to go have a talk about Paul Scholes, because Paul Scholes says, the problem with all Manchester United forwards is that none of them are an actual centre-forward. Martial almost conned us into thinking he was one at the end of last season because he scored so many goals and was quite good. Now, Laurie's laughing because we've just been
just
speaking
like
about...
the quite good bit at the end.
Yeah, we're just sort of... It's a very strange series of quotes here from Paul Scholes, who's been in the news quite often throughout the international break due to goings-on at Salford City at the moment as well. Laurie, you've just been laughing there. Someone asked it to you first. Is Anthony Martial a striker, or has he conned us?
I think conned is probably a pretty strong word, particularly given Paul Scholes was pretty fulsome in his praise towards the end of last season when, you know, Martial was doing the business, really. You know, particularly that game against Copenhagen when he was brilliant. I think perhaps, you know, that kind of central striking role, which Cavani does brilliantly, is not what comes naturally to Anthony Martial. He's more of a, you know, he enjoys the quick passing and the fluid movements that you can get from dropping a bit deeper and then finishing. I think his finishing ability is really, really good. So listen, you know, is he going to be that, you know, Alan Shearer, you know, the guy, you know, The Athletic have just signed for a columnist? Is he going to be that kind of centre forward? No, but I think he does have other qualities as a centre forward. And I think he did well as the number nine last season. You know, I don't think you can scoff at sort of 23 goals that he scored. And I actually think that United, you know, if they created more chances for him, if there were, he does need to, and I think he did improve his sort of instincts in the 6-yard box. You know, we saw that a couple of times towards the end of the season where he got in there and, you know, tried to break his nose to score a goal, as Solskjaer has wanted to say. But I think ultimately United could actually create more chances, you know, in a bigger volume for all the front three, really. So yeah, I'd probably say Paul Scholes has been a bit harsh there by saying Con does, but I can understand the general sentiment in that United haven't got a centre forward who is absolutely hungry for goals, you know, in that kind of physical presence. You know, that's why they wanted Erling Haaland. That's why Solskjaer still, I think, would like Erling Haaland and doesn't think that one is a totally ridiculous idea. You know, no bridges were burnt when he did decide to go to Borussia Dortmund, you know, from Solskjaer's perspective, I don't think. That's what Cavani has been brought in to do. Odinogalo was that style, but I think, you know, he's not quite at the same level as Cavani, obviously, and, you know, he's going back in January anyway. So yeah, I think Paul Scholes probably been a bit harsh there in summary.
This is a really interesting one because obviously Cavani's going to miss the Newcastle game due to isolation. Martial's going to miss this game due to suspension. And they want to get this to you here. Do you think Scholes is being fair to Martial? And also, who would you have lead the line on Saturday?
That fella who gets paid 15 quid to play for Newcastle, sign him up, reverse it and stuff like going round. I think Paul Scholes is being blunt, and that's what he is. You know, when he does TV, he talks like he's talking to his mates in North Manchester, for better or for worse, because his quotes are absolutely brilliant. He's fascinating to watch. At times he will say, yeah, probably I was a bit harsh there. Or maybe he doesn't realise how powerful his words are in comparison with other people on TV who are more polished, or they choose the words carefully. But he knows football. He really reads the game well. And what he says is pretty much what a lot of fans say. I think Martial had a very good season last year, as Laurie said. I also remember Paul Scholes complimenting Martial throughout. United, as Laurie said, absolutely wanted a number nine. Igalo hasn't quite worked out as it looked like it might have done just around the lockdown. I think he's been really disappointing in the games against Luton and Brighton and the League Cup. But Cavani's come in and he is absolutely a number nine. And you're going to get injuries, you're going to get absences, and we've got them going into the Newcastle game at the weekend. This is why Ollie wanted to bring players in, and he didn't want to be short, because at the start of last season, having left it so long to get rid of Romelu Lukaku, United went into the season too short. And that showed, and it was painful. So Newcastle's going to be difficult on Saturday because you're missing those two players, Cavani's definitely been a world-class player, and Martial has pushed towards that level, although like the rest, he's been pretty poor so far this season. So what do you do next? Dan James, he's been poor as well, unfortunately. Igalo, I mean, if he's chosen to start, I don't think that'd be lifting any spirits among Manchester United fans either. Or would you play Paul Pogba in a more advanced role? I remember speaking to someone at the club after Donny van de Beek had just signed, and that person was Mike Phelan, and he said that they saw van de Beek as a half forward, like a really advanced player. So maybe there's something in that. Play him in an even more advanced role. I don't think there's certainly not a number nine, but that term half forward or like a second striker. And they need their existing players to play well. Marcus Rashford's been pretty flat so far this season. And yeah, Newcastle, I'm not really filled with optimism, as you can probably tell.
I hope
it will. And the thing is, Carl, with all these teams, when you least expect it, it does actually come. And just as they're doing really well, then they tend to drop. So, I don't know, December last year, desperate for a win against Tottenham, and then they played really well against Tottenham. I think that was Greenwood's first start. And then beat Manchester City away, best performance of the season, and then lose to Watford, who'd won one of the previous 17. So, and Ollie's got to take some of the blame for this, because at times his team look unbeatable, and United still haven't lost an away game since January. We've got to say that. So I might be pessimistic going into the game at St James's Park. United have gone a long, long time without losing away from home, apart from at neutral venues, and neutral venues are where cups tend to be decided. I do know that. but yeah, they've got to get the form back. Collectively, even with the players missing, those players have got to raise their levels substantially. And has the preparation been good? Not really. With International Week, there's going to be one day of training before Newcastle at the weekend, and that is far from ideal. Some of those players will not even have one day of training ahead of that game because they've been on international duty. To be fair, when Ollie does have the team to prepare properly in Marbella or in Dubai or in the lockdown, he tends to prepare the team really, really well. Has he had them all week? No, not at all.
We've got a question here from Ronan. He's asked a really, really fun one. Andy, it's about that time in the episode where we always talk about that quote from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about rather having a hole in his squad than an arsehole. Do you think Manchester United are too nice?
I don't think nice is the right word. I think they're lacking characters. and that's been pretty obvious in the matches so far. They're lacking warriors, and I know that opinion is shared by some pretty senior people who've been not at the club but have worked at the club for a long time. That team is lacking characters, and I'm hoping that Cavani can redress that in some way.
Laurie, Manchester United, are they too nice?
I don't know about too nice, because I think they have got an edge, but I think you could see there was a fraying in the game against Spurs that, you know, maybe a bit of nastiness might have done them good. I think, you know, Scott McTominay did come on and you know, do a bit of that, and to be fair, Luke Shaw did hack down Lucas Moura, so I suppose maybe I'm being a bit, you know, not doing a giving them a good service. I think it's more, you know, just the collective, you know, identity of the team and making sure they're all pulling in the same direction rather than necessarily not being nasty enough.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talk of the Devils. We'll be back next week after the PSG game. Other than that, it's thank you from me, a thank you from Laurie.
Thanks, guys. Cheers for listening.
And a thanks from Andy.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks for listening.
And thank you, listener. It's another episode of Talk of the Devils, a Manchester United podcast brought to you from The Athletic. We'll see you next week.